I keep referring to praying with. Last time, the great theologian Father Wally Baim asked me, what's the difference between praying with and praying for? What do you mean by praying with? And I remember that because that's still a good question. And what I'm moving towards is an awareness that if God is always communicating, then prayer is got something to do with receiving and being influenced by and then withing or praying with what's already been given rather than praying for even more to be given. So praying with, it, as we're talking about these symbols of Christmas and Advent, to let them speak to you rather than you speak about them. What is a deeper reality that's available to us to receive and then be influenced by them? So that's what I mean by praying with those. So we have been praying a little bit with the Christmas tree as a religious symbol, a definite religious symbol, and all kinds of big ones and little ones, and the decorations that go with them, and the lights and the ornaments and the memories and the promise of fruitfulness and the pledge of fruitfulness, that as the tree brings forth fruit, so does Christ, who in the last discourse of John's Gospel says, fruit that will last. Oh, I breathe upon you, I impregnate you, I cultivate you, that there might be fruit as the fulfillment of the promise of Christ's life, that our lives will be fruitful in whatever way. It's not standardized, as you might say, as you well know, intimacy can't be standardized. You can't standardize marital love. It's so unique and particular. You can't read a book about that kind of intimacy. And we had in the Jesuit high schools, we had a book in the 50s called Modern Youth and Chastity, and it was all about mainly don'ts. There weren't many do's. And I remember one particular. Because they were trying to standardize intimacy, mainly don't do it. And one of the big questions was, how long could one kiss last? Yeah. That was a big one. And the answer was, for as long as you could say the word grapefruit. Well, if you take a deep breath, you can say grapefruit for a long time. It's hard to kiss and say grapefruit at the same time, but you can't standardize intimacy, and God comes to us according to us, and we pray with those events, those sacraments, through which grace comes. Well, what other symbols are there? There obviously are the symbols of light, and again, in this North American, Northern Hemisphere milieu, there was darkness. And so bonfires and eventually candles became very important as symbols of celebration, of the coming of light, that there is not going to be any darkness, so that candles become another symbol of life coming back. And of course, our belief is, say, in the Paschal candle, is that the light of Christ, which illumines everybody, the light of Christ which is entrusted to the newborn at baptism, that light of Christ is still at times dim in our experience. There is darkness in our lives in which it doesn't make sense. It's not supposed to be. What did I do wrong? There's all kinds of doubts and fears and questions that come because of the darkness. And there's no easy way to explain the darkness. It's tragedy, and terrible things happen to us as human beings. And it's the darkness is our humanity. And we have light as a promise of Christ's fidelity. We have light of our candles, the increasing each week of Advent. It becomes more and more as the sun increases its northern journey. So there is the increase in light. At the coming of Christ more into our life, there is more light. So each week there is a new candle as a pledge of the oncoming of the Christ as light. And so we have candles in our windows, and people say, well, that's welcome. Or it's some cultures, it's the to guide the Holy Family and the luminary shepherds. And there's all kinds of reasons, but the object is, there's darkness. There is the reality of darkness in the human experience. And Jesus says, I have come as light. And you can read that in the beginning, the prologue of John's Gospel, in which John uses light often in light and dark. If you know the symbolism in John's Gospel, bad things happen at night in John's Gospel, and good things happen at daybreak and in the daytime. That when Judas left the upper room, it was dark. It was night. And Nicodemus comes by night. And he's arrested at night. But at daybreak, he appears to them on the shore of Galilee in John 21. So you get the whole symbol, the constant symbol of light. But if you read in the prologue, it's strong about that Christ comes as light to illumine the world and illumine us. But we have to pray with the reality of our darkness. And what does the light of Christ mean? Now here's one of the hardest parts about Christ as light and the birth of Christ and the redemption. Jesus came to save us, not solve us. And what we would like is a me that doesn't need salvation but needs solution. My problems, the conundrums of my life, the mysteries. Could you just explain it to me? And so we can go to Scripture, or we go to the church, or we go to prayer. Give me an answer. And we are so addicted to light that darkness can never be a grace. We're not used to darkness. There's lights everywhere now, and at least in the place where I live, they can do farm work at night because there's huge lights in the fields now on tractors and wagons and all that illumine everything. We are not familiar with darkness. As soon as you walk into a room, you turn on the light. Darkness is a bad, and it always was. We even say when you don't know, you say I'm in the dark about that. There is a blessedness about dark. It's mysterious, and it's adventurous, and Jesus comes as light, and it was so that we can live not with complete understanding, but with the little understanding we have, we can make our way. We can remember, we can imagine, and we can see. But we don't like dark. Well, one of the good experiences is to become familiar with dark so that you can become familiar with mystery and adventure. So that one candle is a good thing, and two candles, and lights on our Christmas tree and in our windows, those are all good things, just so you know what you're doing, and praying with them. So that's a wonderful symbol. Light and the warmth of candles, they are a joy. They're a comfort with which to pray. Another, and maybe the most important and celebrated symbol of Christmas is gift giving and gift receiving. And so we have to spend some time about that, because I think that's so central in the spiritual life, so central to the sacramental makeup of the Catholic Church. I hope that sometime in your life you have an experience of not being able to find the right gift. I hope you can. It's a funny way to say it. But what that means is that the love and acceptance of the person for whom you would like to make or buy a present, it can't be. The gift only would say, I am too poor to have anything to give you. If you've read the short story by O. Henry, The Gift of the Magi, or seen the little play, it's that kind of thing. But to love someone so much that one gift can't say it, it's impossible. And you go all over and you look on eBay and you go to all the catalogs and you walk all over and you just say, if just one thing, and sometimes you just give up. Or you say something, this is the deepest expression of the poverty of my words to express the depth of my love for you. That's a wonderful experience. What is the psychology, therefore the spirituality of gifting? And then we'll talk about receiving. But gifting, that you are saying something about you as giver. You want to say it. And you want it to be as best an expression as you can of you first. I'm saying something about me. I'm also saying something about you. But the first thing, I want to say something about me. Maybe I have said this in your presence before, but I had a sister 2 years older than myself. And it always seemed she had a different boyfriend at Christmas. And she, of course, expected that this bozo would bring her a gift, and inevitably he did. And we knew that she had a gift upstairs wrapped in white paper and one in red paper. And she would evaluate the gift that the squire had arrived to present, and then she would go and get a red box or a white box. And that was part of Christmas, to watch which box, because we knew which one was the more expensive one, the cheaper one. She generally helped me embrace celibacy, I think. But what is the giver saying about him or herself? What is the revelation? See? Revelation in our incarnate system, our flesh system, our human system, Words aren't enough. There has to be a gesture. That's got to be accompanied by words, but gestures. What's the it? So, the it is, I'm saying something about me by what I give you. Then I ask you to receive both the gift, the words, and what I say about you. What I say about you is part of the gift, is the huge part of the gift, and to receive it. And then, what is being said about us? It's a deepening of us. So we have to look at those. And there, we want to amuse or surprise or enhance the person's life somehow. That's a wonderful thing, to pray with that, to pray with your shopping list as a prayer, rather than just something to get done. Got her off the list. That was easy, and him and those. That's good. Or let's just give everybody a fruit basket, or you know, and that's what companies do. And that's, I mean, it's okay, but the sacramentalization of it is gone, and in this whole culture, they took the sacramentalization of gifts away, and made it commercial. I was born on Thanksgiving Day in 1939. I was born the last day that Thanksgiving could be on the last Thursday of November. Roosevelt changed it in 1939 so that it had to be on the fourth Thursday, which it was this year. If it were the last Thursday, my birthday would have been on Thanksgiving Day, because my birthday was 2 days ago. And why did they change it? Shopping days. That's the truth. So the commercialization of Christmas, I fully understand, and it helps a lot of the economy and all that, but it stole the sacramentalization of the gifts. So we have to get back to that. I'm all for gifts. If each one of you wants, I'll give you my address. You could send. I love gifts. I love opening them, trying to figure out what they are, shaking them, anything. My secretary assistant in Omaha gave me a birthday present, and the four of us in our community opened it up, and we tried to figure it out. It's an apple peeler core slicer, all in one. So we're trying to figure it out. We'd be damned if we'll look at the directions. That's a definitely last resort. But the opening is just very exciting. It's all wrapped up, and then you open the box, and then you say, "What is this? Is some kind of shaving machine or something?" Well, it's just wonderful to receive presents as sacraments. As the receiving is a wonderful part. The giving is what we're talking about, because it's. Remember, in the first conference, I was talking about if you don't understand the sacraments in your house, you're never going to understand the sacraments in the church. Because the sacraments in your house are present realities that have a history of a historical meaning. But it's making history now. See, that's what I'm saying. That it's an event, Normandy or something, birthday or something, and here it is. It's a now, and a then at the same time. Does that make sense to you? It's a now and a then. And you've got to accept the now. So, gifts are that way. So what are you doing when you are making up a shopping list? You are entering into the reality of this. We're no longer giving Christmas gifts. We're no longer giving presents. Okay? That's out. Those are no more words in our Christian vocabulary. We are giving sacraments. Excellent. We are sacrament shopping. That's what. And you go up to the lady. And you say, I'd like to buy that sacrament. 911 is very busy these days because of Gillick spirituality. But that's what you're doing. Just remember, you're buying sacraments, not gifts. But gifts are sacraments. But the primary definition is they are an expression of God's love made visible right here, right now, to be celebrated in a future then about an historical now. Okay? So that might take some of the pain away from going into what we call getting mauled. You know, but I want to say something. And maybe what you will say is, it can't be said, dear. It can't be said. I give you a lock of my hair, or I give you a comb, as in O. Henry, or I gave up my watch chain, and I give you a watch. It's about sacraments. And if you understand that, then Christmas giving and receiving is very prayerful. Instead of ripping through the paper and like we did as kids, you know, just what's the next one and what did you get and is it better than me and does mom and dad love you more because you got a green one and I got a, you know, all that stuff. It's not comparing, it's receiving. Why? What's going on here? What's the theology underneath this kind of sacramental spirituality? Well, it's obvious that the mysterious otherness of God said, I want to tell you something about me. And in doing so, I want to tell you something about you. I want you to receive what I say about you, what I say about me, and what I say about us. So those three things are what's being expressed, what's being incarnated. We are, in giving Christmas sacraments, we are playing out again, or displaying, or remembering the gift of creation, the gift of my being created, the gift of life, the gift of the relationship that God has with me. But it all begins with God. It all begins with the giver. And that's why I keep saying Advent is a time to prepare and pray about receptivity. Because God is the giver. And I am the receiver. God is the artist. And those of you who are artists, the medium, remember, the medium will always resist you. The clay, the marble, the notes on the piano, everything, all art form, the medium is resisted, and the beauty of the art is what the artist can do while reverencing the resistance. So that Michelangelo does not use dynamite, but eventually soft cloth and emery and files and things. Why? Reverencing. So that the creator reverences the creation. That's number one, okay? And you, as a creation, will resist the creator's artistry. That's just part of the spirituality. And we cannot be angry at our resistance. Okay? Knowing our resistance, our reluctance to receive, our reluctance, as somebody asked last time, Why am I afraid to be loved? Why am I afraid to be changed? Why am I afraid to be in an intimate relationship of any kind? Because it's an adventure. And if there's one thing I want, it's the security of the known, of the familiar. So to go into the new of a relationship of any kind is frightening. So we resist intimacy. That's the truth. That part of our resistance, our fear, our human, as somebody said last night, our ego protects our hide, protects us from injury. We're so afraid. The little kid does not want to jump into his parents' arms from the side of the pool because only he can take care of himself. That's our way. When we grow in that, and then we have to grow out of that. We grow into the fearful protection of ourselves, then we have to grow little by little, fully aware of the resistance that's caused by our fears. We, little by little, let go of that and trust a little more. Not easy. And we never trust totally. We never do anything totally. I don't give myself totally to God. God knows very well that I can't give totally. You know why? Because I can't give what I don't have. And I don't have myself totally. You don't have yourself totally. You don't know yourself totally, and you haven't accepted yourself totally, so how can you give yourself totally away? You don't have it. Very simple. So we have a resistance, and this creating God comes to us very respectful and reverent of our resistance and says, I want then, first of all, the giver wants to tell us about the giver. And we have to receive, what is the giver saying? That's part of, and as you as a Christmas sacrament purchaser or maker, you are saying something about yourself. My younger brother is making fishing rods for his sons. I am sure that those sons are not listening to my talks, so I can say this. But that's just their resistance to the Jesuit uncle. But he's making fishing rods for them. With got to wind things, the eyes of the fishing rod, and just do it right. Because he knows something about his boys. They love to fish. He also wants to tell them about something about their history. So he found two old Mitchell spinning reels, which their grandfather, our father, bought probably 40 years ago. And he found a man who will rebuild those fishing reels. And they're spinning reels, so it's got to be all fixed up, springs and all the stuff. And so he is saying something, my brother is saying something about himself, about his own history and his relationship with his father through these fishing reels. These fishing reels have a history. And they're the same parts, they're the same fishing reel. It's just oiled and new springs and things in there. My brother looked all over for a guy that would do this. One person in Milwaukee will do this. So he's saying something, my brother is saying something about himself. God is saying something about God. Not totally. What my brother is saying with that fishing rod and reel doesn't express totally all that my brother is. A lot of it. My brother is very loving and reverent of his history. He's the one that gave me the sand from Normandy. We are saying something about ourselves because God is. And we have to pray with that. And we have to pray in the reception of that. That God is saying, I am the Creator, and I am constantly creating you, and I'm doing it out of love, and I'm doing it respectfully of your resistance. I will also give you a gift that you might not understand. And I will help you try to understand that. In the second chapter of 1 Corinthians, Paul writes that the work of the Holy Spirit is to help you understand and receive the gifts that are already given. So if you make something, or say with the fishing reels, I'm sure that my brother will tell his sons all about how much it took to wind this and get this balance just right and the fishing reel. And he might tell his sons that he himself fixed up the reel. But he wants his sons to know all about the fishing rod and the reel and its history and what it means. Well, that's the work of love. I just don't give you a gift. I want to help you see it as gift eventually. But we don't see all the gifts that God gives us as gifts. And this room is loaded with people who are receiving or have received things that they just don't understand. I don't know if you remember, but coming up to give this presentation last year, this young woman bumped into me and she apologized, maybe you remember. And I got into a big discussion. I told her, no, don't be sorry, because all interruptions are invitations. And that completely befuddled her, and she said, what are you talking about? So we're talking, and we just had gone through security, and I'm putting on my shoes and my belt and jacket, and she said, I'm very interested in what you're saying, that there is no such thing as an interruption. They're all invitations. I said, that's right, I believe that. She said, well, let me walk you to your gate. And so we walked to the gate, and she said, now you really believe this, that all interruptions are invitations? I said, yes, I do. She said, well, that's very good. Your plane was just canceled. And it was just canceled. And so last year, I don't know if you remember, my plane landed at 6:30. And this began at 7. That's why I drove this year. So that Laura wouldn't pass out. So we have things that we call gifts because we see them. But until we see them for what they are, they're an interruption. They're an adventure. They're an intrusion. They're a disruption. We have to make way for something. I don't know where to put it. It's very difficult to receive some gifts because our inability to understand the gift and to accept it makes the revelation of the giver somewhat murky. We don't understand the giver because we don't understand the gift. And we get mad at the giver because we don't understand the gift. Or we do understand it and we don't like it at all. And it's very painful to receive some things as definite interruptions. It's not supposed to be. And then we had the big discussion last night, why do bad things happen to good people? And how to trust God's providence. Not easy, because we have our agenda makes us blind to what is going on. We don't like the truth that's being revealed. We don't like the revelation. Very difficult. And some gifts are never completely unwrapped. So something is being said by you, about you, as you give a sacrament. So we're giving sacraments this Christmas time. We're making them. We're baking them. We're showing up. We're showing up for them. We're revealing ourselves. We want to be known by the gifts the sacraments we share. Now, if you don't want to be known, then you give a fruit basket or a gift certificate. I had a friend in high school. Every Christmas, I have no idea what was going on. Every year, he got a dozen pair of underwear. I mean, he got other things, but that was always the low light, I'd say. But anyway, let's talk about receiving now. Something is being said by the gift to the receiver about the receiver. That's so important in sacramental living. It's so important in the experience of Advent, because, just what we were saying, the giver, love does want to reveal itself. And we say that Jesus is the expression of who God is and who we are in God's eyes. Who am I? Who do you say I am, God? That's got to be received. But the difficulty is sometimes in receiving gifts is all kinds of psychological things. I'm not worthy. You shouldn't have done this. I mean, that's, oh, you shouldn't have done this. Well, that's probably true. I wanted to, though. And to receive what is being said about the giver and what is being said about me. And to pray with that. And to pray also with the gift of Christmas cards. We usually look at the signature and then put it in a basket. But to pray with wishes and things. I mean, people send out newsletters in Christmas cards, and that's all very good. But in our sending of Christmas sacrament cards, those are sacraments too, to really say something is very prayerful. Now, I know you got 200. Well, they can arrive after Christmas. They're all right. But to say something about you. I want to say something about you. I want to give you light. I want to give you life. I want to give you this as a sacrament, not just a Christmas card. And then it'd be very interesting to pray, I think, with cards in two categories. Who sent me Christmas cards and who sent me Christmas gifts of sacraments? Who sent me a sacrament? And to pray with those, to put those in a special basket or tape them. I don't know what you do with your Christmas cards, but to put them on the wall or somewhere, or hang them, some people hang them on the Christmas tree. Hang those that are saying something about you. Is that narcissistic? Is that egocentric? Not at all. It's receptivity. It's simplicity. It's humility. It's celebration. It's Christmas. And another way of receiving, or practicing, let's say, practicing the importance of being receptive to God's grace and God's creation of me. Because those cards that come to you as sacraments are, if you've been following me at all, those are meant to create you. So that when we write Christmas cards and Christmas notes, let them be a revelation of what God does. That is, God creates by giving people themselves. That's what creation is. That's what redemptive love is. That sin would be a way of saying, this is who I am when I'm not identified by your creation of me. I will create myself this way. That's what one way of looking at sin. And God says, no, my redemptive creative love, creation and redemption being the same thing in a way, I want to continue creation by redemption, by giving you back your name, giving you back what I think of you. So you don't have to, in your Christmas cards, say, let me tell you what I think of you. That's not it. But in some way, give people some experience of your knowledge of them, of your appreciation, of your love, of your attentiveness to them. And then watch for those cards that do that with you, and you put them over here. The other ones that say, Happy Holiday from Target, or Hope You Are Well. They did it with Advent quickness. And we would like to write cards and receive them with Advent patience. Because it's the same struggle to receive what people are saying about us. That struggle is a small sacramentalization of what does God have to do to convince us of God's love and constant creation of us. So even cards are prayer cards. And it's fun to separate them. Which ones are the sacraments and which of them is psychological or interpersonal, but not real sacraments. Does that make sense? I hope it does. That's important. So then we are receiving gifts, and some of the gifts are quite wrapped up. And it takes a long time to get, especially if they've come in the mail, to get through the tape and the rope and the string and the boxes within boxes and then newspapers. I must tell you that when I was in my first year of the Jesuits, we didn't have anything for Advent. I mean, we didn't get mail or anything. It was sensory deprivation. And it was supposed to help us. And so on Christmas morning, we got, you know, all these boxes from relatives and everybody. And I mean, unbelievable boxes and stuff. Well, my father and mother sent a box, and there were wonderful gifts in there. But I'm receiving it, and I'm saying there's something going on here. Let me think. And I realized that there was an enormous amount of newspapers stuffed in that box. It was a big box, and it wasn't as big as the presents would dictate the box should be. And what? And then I started very carefully putting the papers together, and they were all sports pages of the Packers and Marquette and Wisconsin. And he knew that we could not get any sports news ever. We didn't know. And my father was saving the sports pages all fall, and then got this big box to send me something that had to be unwrapped twice. So you unwrap the presents and then unwrap the meaning of all these newspapers. And I didn't get a letter saying, be sure to read the stuffing, the packing, because there's some. He just said, you'll figure it out. Well, if you sit there long enough, now obviously, by now you know, I never could figure my father out, but we had inklings of his perversity. And of course, his tremendous love. So he packed the newspapers full of sports pages. And of course, the novice master wanted to know all the gifts you got. And you don't want the packing, do you, Father? No, you can take that away. Thank you, Father. So we had a lot of reading material for the long, cold, celibate Saturday nights. So some gifts take a long time to unwrap and figure out, but something is being said about me in the gifts we receive, and it's very important to pray with them. Or they're just Christmas presents. But if you play with the word presence, from ENTS to ENCE, something is present here. A him or a her or a them is present. So that my father was very present. My first Christmas without my mom and dad and my family, they were present. In the present, if you see. There was a presence of them, and they were saying something about their knowledge of me, and to just be overwhelmed that, I mean, the little gifts and cookies and things, they were wonderful. But what was really the smile was how my father was getting around Jesuit authority. And I knew that when I, see, and our letters were censored, so I couldn't write them and say, I wrote him back and my mom and dad and said, I appreciated the gifts you sent. They were wonderful. And of course, we had to get permission for them from the superior, and then some we didn't get to keep because that was good for us. But I said, I received all, and I underlined, I received all the gifts and your thoughtfulness, and I am enjoying all of them. And so there's a little undercover things. The apple did not fall far from the tree. Well, anyway, to pray with what's being received, you see, that's so important. Of me, what of me is being asked to receive? What is the giver, the sacramentalizer, saying about me? Because we got to practice that, because that's absolutely the whole center of our religious experience, is that Jesus came. The birth of the incarnate Word, the Word is meant to be heard, and the Word is meant to be received. And that's why in the third Mass of Christmas, we read the prologue, the first 19-20 verses of John's Gospel, and I'd highly recommend them as you prepare, because it's all about to those who did receive, to those who came to believe. He gave them the power to become children of God, the gift of becoming children of God. I have to receive that. Now remember, last night I said spirituality is living with the tension that your beliefs bring about. Our beliefs, our theology, causes us tension. One of the tensions is to be gratefully humbled by the gift of life, and the gifts of life, even if we don't know them, what they are at any one time. To practice receptivity is a wonderful Advent thing. To really practice Advent receptivity. What would that mean? It would mean that you don't reach across the table. It's just very simple things. Would you please pass? Can I get you this? Would you like me to pour this? Yes. To let go of Midwest, Upper Midwest, United States, radical independence, and to become receptive of, for instance, what people say, to really listen to what people say, to let them tell the story and not say, "Oh, let me tell you about Mike. You got a cold? Oh, let me tell you about cold. Mine redefined the term, and let me tell you." No, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to listen to you. The gift of listening is an Advent gift. Do you hear what I hear? That song. Listen to all the Christmas carols. There's a great Advent thing. Listen to Christmas carols. What's being said there? Now, some of it's heretical, actually, but they're beautiful. But there are a lot of heresies. But it's all right. We can be heretical. But if you could listen to people more, and just shut your mouth, and let them give the gift of their insights, even if you already have heard that joke or that story, let them tell it again. It's all about receptivity. It's an Advent thing that goes all year long, to be receptive, that once I do receive it, then I can really share it. I really possess it. I've accepted it, and then it's part of me, and I give it away. So that the arms coming down from on the Christmas tree, thawing out, that's a Christ experience, that I become freer and less frozen about my receptivity, that the tree limbs receive the lights and the ornaments and the tinsel and the popcorn strings and everything, and then they are meant to be distributed. The light is meant to be seen. The beauty of the ornaments. Another story, a Christmas story about my father. I don't know why I'm telling you about my father. He was a Christmas character. Scrooge and Tiny Tim all at the same time, my father. But we got one year a ping pong ball shooting gun. And it had a barrel, and then you pull this thing underneath it, and it would create a pressure and the ping pong balls. And he loved to see if he could shoot the ornaments off the tree from the couch. He was a fisherman, but not a hunter. But this was pretty safe, and he really enjoyed it. And he enjoyed my mother watching this because these are very expensive. He got ornaments from Denmark and all these things, and he would try to. I mean, he was. It wasn't a very accurate gun, and he wasn't very accurate about most things, but. Shooting, I mean, that's Christmas. He really received our gun that he gave us. But the Christmas tree is such a sacrament of distribution. But only after it's been decorated. Only after it's been received. The gift, part of the receptivity of the gift is distribution. Part of my reception. One of the people on our staff gave me a box of sugar-free. I'm not diabetic, I'm just a sugarholic, so I try not to eat sugar. I do have minor indiscretions, but for the most part, it works pretty well. And so that night I had a class with kids, about 10 kids for a class. And I said, I got this gift, it's my birthday. He said, Father. I said, here's. And it was a wonderful young woman, delightful, rather shy little person. She said, I love caramels. And she took three caramels. And I'm saying, this is wonderful that I can put this box of candy out and somebody just gobble them up. You know, and 10 kids and one little box of candy, it was terrific. I didn't have to take it home to my ungrateful brothers. So. So you give it away. But I had to receive it first. And what that other person in my office was saying about our relationship and about me and about her, the candy, and she knew I didn't need sugar and all this stuff, and then to give it away. Part of receiving is distribution. And we're going to see that at the Eucharist. We see it at the Eucharist all the time. That part of the reception of the Eucharist is to prepare to be a distributor of grace myself. So that in the experience of a sacramental receiving, we are preparing to be people of the church. People who live the sacraments we have received. That is just a great way to celebrate. Receiving cards, receiving presents, receiving phone calls, emails, whatever, really receive them as preparation for further distribution. Not of the candy, but of you. That's the thing that all the gifts that we receive, the gifts aren't meant to be shared. Well, they are, but more to prepare me to be offered as a gift. You as offered as a gift. That's the fruitfulness of the Christmas tree, that I become an orange and an apple, preparing to be offered. When it's time, when it's matured, when I have received myself enough that I give myself appropriately, discreetly, discernedly. Just don't give myself away as something common. I am very special. And I don't hold myself back, but I am reverence of, respectful of boundaries and ability of other people to receive it. And when there's that receptivity, then openness, and maybe what I give people, you give people is the openness. And then you give yourself as a gift somehow, by singing a song, playing a piano, cooking, whatever. It can't be. Okay, well, the old clock on the wall says that maybe you have to do it yourself. What I didn't talk about was what it's saying about us. But it just follows that what the giver, what God is saying about us, is family, is union, is belonging, is unabandoned. So you read all Second Isaiah, you read the Advent first readings especially, it's all, you are no longer this, you're this. You read Isaiah 62, I no longer called you abandoned, but I called you espoused. That we are in union. There is something sacred now about my life, because it's not just my life, but it's in union with the God who creates me, constantly creates me. Well, anyway, what I've tried to do is say, there are things in the world, there are snowmen and snowflakes and stars, well, all those hymns and about the little Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, and little, no, it's okay, little snowflake and little angel. God makes much of little. And Tiny Tim and the baby Jesus. It's all, God makes much of little. But he makes much. And to be obsessed with the little, with the insufficiency, with the not enoughness, is not to know that you do belong. So we pray with the things that you see, the tinsel, the icicle, the bells. Pray with them. They're beautiful. And take them back as the religious sacraments that they are.